Excuse me, this is the conference coordinator, and at this time I would like to inform participants that your call is now being recorded. If anyone has any objections, you may disconnect at this time. And Mr. Schwartz, you may begin.
Thanks very much. Well, hello everyone, and welcome to this call of the HSTLD Advisory Group. I'm actually going to turn the meeting over shortly to Michael and Christoph and Andy, but I will go ahead and take roll before doing so. So that being said, Steve Holston, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Hi, Steve. Tony Holmes?
That's great.
Hi. Sorry. Mikey O'Connor?
I'm here.
Great. Adam Palmer?
Here.
David Maher? What about Ching Chow?
Present.
Good morning, Ching.
Morning.
John Levine.
Good afternoon.
If folks could mute their phones, too, if you're not speaking. I'm getting a little bit of feedback on the line right now. John Levine? What about Evan Leibovich?
Here.
John McElwain?
Here.
Eric Brown? Okay. What about Brian Cute? Paul Stahura? Lynn Goodendorf? Neil Warner? Sean Chen? Is that a yes, Sean?
Yes.
Okay. Can barely hear you. Rude? Actually, Rude is no longer going to be participating in this group. He sent me a message offline this morning. John Christoph? Andy Steingrubel?
I'm here.
Hi, Andy. Christoph, we know, is here. Jonathan Frakes? Jonathan? Jay Daly? How about Jeff Schmidt? How about Frank Martin?
Present.
Michael? Okay. Thanks, Frank. Michael Barrett?
He won't be joining.
Okay. Joe Saint-Sauve?
This is Joe.
Thanks, Joe. Paul Smoser?
I'm here.
Hi, Paul. Luis Munez?
I'm here. Luis Munoz.
Hi, Luis.
Hi, Luis.
Michael Pelage, we know, is here. What about Ken Stubbs? How about Ashif Kabani? Barry Cobb?
Present.
Hi, Barry. And what about Mike Rodenbaugh? And then for ICANN staff, Andy Welch, we know, is on the line. Greg Rattray is on mute. Dave Piscatello, are you with us? Jeff Bickers? What about Kurt Pritz? Dan Halloran? David Giza?
Here.
Hi, David.
Hello, Craig.
Francisco Arias? And what about Kim Davies? And how about Mark McFadden?
I'm here.
Hi, Mark. Okay, Michael and Christoph, Andy as well. That concludes the roll call.
Okay, thank you, Craig. Thanks. With regard to the meeting times, this is the first time that we're trying a time that is hopefully more suitable for the Asia Pacific participants. Again, we'll see how this goes. Next week, we will go back to the earlier time, and we will continue to rotate. Again, depending how this goes, we have flexibility to move it and make it obviously most mutually beneficial for all team members. So that's as far as meeting times. As far as the agenda today, what we're looking to do here is, I think last week a lot of people were talking about what is the problem statement, what are some of the what is the problem statement that our goal is trying to, if you will, achieve or solve. Paul had given us a lot of background information on some of the dialogue that had taken place between the financial security or the financial sector as well as ICANN. So today, one of the things that I think we will be doing is allowing Paul to perhaps get us up to speed on some of that background information so that we would prevent ourselves from, if you will, reinventing the wheel. As far as, just again, skipping ahead right here, as far as the to-do list, has everyone filed their statement of interest? Craig, I think you said last week you were going to sort of take a quick look. Were you able to get to that this week or not?
Yeah, I can tell you the ones that we're missing are, and there are only a couple, there are only a few. It's Evan Leibovich.
Mm-hmm.
And Evan, I know you're on the phone today.
Yeah. Is there a way that you can just reuse the one that I already submitted to the RAA group?
Can you just copy and paste it into an email to the HSTLD group?
Okay, will do.
Thanks.
Yep, recycling is good.
Andy Steingrubel?
I posted mine to the list.
Okay, then I'll have to look for that again. Michael Barrett?
That's not, I'll ask him about it.
And Asif Kabani, who hasn't been at a meeting or submitted a statement of interest, so we may only be missing maybe missing one or two.
Excellent. Thank you very much for that update, Craig. The other update, if you could perhaps, Craig, is I believe ICANN staff should have sent out invitations for the Social Techs Wiki. I received mine yesterday. Craig, did that go out to all list participants? Can you confirm that?
Yes, it did.
Excellent.
Yeah,
excellent.
And Michael, it's Andy really quickly. So if anyone didn't receive an email message or if they're having trouble getting in, could you please let me know via the HSTLD message group?
Okay. I can tell you right now, this is Evan. I didn't get one.
Evan? Okay.
Mikey here. I didn't either.
Mike. Which Mike?
Mikey.
Okay. Mikey. Sorry, Mikey. Okay.
There you go.
Okay, and as I said, that this is going to be important because what we're going to look to be doing is, again, looking to use the Social Techs Wiki to try to do some of our work intersessionally between these teleconferences. So, again, hopefully that's something that we could start to use, in fact, this week. Now that it's up and operational. So, again, Craig, thank you very much for taking the lead and following up on that with ICANN staff. I think right now what we're looking at here is we're going to go back to, I guess, the group purpose statement. Okay. Andy, do you want to sort of take this, and I know this is one of the things that you've been working and evolving over the period of time, so perhaps we can try to get through this purpose statement rather quickly. Again, I think there was some discussion on the list by Mike Rodenbaugh, who was talking about removing any reference or linking to the EOI. That's what I thought I heard Kurt also say last week. So perhaps we can just, if you will, try to, if you will, nail that down right now as far as a purpose statement. And then we could perhaps move into Paul's discussion I think is important.
Yeah, I actually had it here just as a review to the to-dos so that we could get to Paul's material first. So the flow is a little unusual. I apologize.
My bad. I see that actually is number four. So actually, thank you for pointing that out to me. So Paul, if you could, you have the floor, and if you could educate us and get us up to speed on a lot of the good work that you have done, I think myself and the group would appreciate it. I know reading through a lot of the documents that you had sent previously, I found them very informative. So the floor is yours, Paul.
Great, thanks. And I did send out, and I know it was in the meeting invite, there were actually two documents. One is a PowerPoint deck that I'll go through pretty quickly, but please feel free to interrupt me, ask questions, whatever the case may be. The other was the actual set of requirements and process changes that we had submitted in August, which certainly goes into much more detail when we get back to the requirements portion. But let me just get launched here. Page two is just an agenda, so let's skip over that quickly. Page three really speaks to the motivations that we as a collective group in the financial services industry were the stimulus for why we actually engaged in the activity that we did. And I think this group is probably astute enough to understand that we would have particular concerns with regard to financial services domains and why, since they are often the subject of attack, either for the purposes of committing fraud, for the purposes of stealing customers' identities, which typically then ends up in more fraud. I think essentially one can think of it as high monetary risks, and as we thought about reputation risk as well, which is that we in the industry think about and our institutions think about, we certainly saw maybe a little bit of a sea change in the sense that as attacks occur on individual institutions' domains today, that certainly has a ripple-down effect, especially clearly those that get publicized. If someone reads about someone else's bank being attacked, it certainly gives them pause to wonder how safe it might be for them to be dealing with their own bank in doing financial transactions. But we also saw a change in the sense that if there were the creation of one or more high-level financial domains under the new GTLD program, that the risk was really changing from an institution level to a more of an industry-wide level. So an attack on a new GTLD that's primarily there to offer financial services is going to affect every subdomain financial institution that might be participating with it. So, again, don't want to spend a whole lot of time on that because I think everybody understands. So if you go to page four, just
Paul,
to give you some background on who put these requirements together, we really started out with four financial services associations, the American Bankers Association, BITS, in which I'm involved, the Financial Services Information Sharing and Analysis Center, and the Financial Services Technology Consortium. And I included in the appendix a little bit more information about each of them. I don't plan on going into detail here. But as we were putting this together, I think it's important to recognize, too, that we consulted with a number of non-U.S. financial associations, and I've listed them there, British, Australian, Canadian Bankers Association, the International Banking Federation, et cetera. And on page five, I also note that we didn't just do this as really financial services associations. We engaged with a number of other either Internet service suppliers or other organizations who had some interest. And as we went through the drafts of what we were doing, we shared them and got feedback. You know, I think it would be safe to assume that not every group that's listed on here was as active in providing feedback, but some of the key players certainly were. On page six, just to give you a little bit of background as to kind of how we got to this point, I guess, in December of 08 and April of 09, both the American Bankers Association and BITS had submitted individual comment letters on DAG versions 1 and 2, respectively. And probably as a result of the April 2009 submissions, in June, we had a series of informal discussions between the four associations and some of the key ICANN leadership at the time with regard to the concerns that the financial services industry had. That, moving to page 7, led to a letter from Paul Toomey in June of 2009 asking us as a group to provide our input. His key motivations, as outlined in the letter, are listed there. Number one, the recognition that we had submitted comment letters on DAG 1 and 2 and had a number of both general and specific concerns. But I think more importantly, ICANN's recognition that the financial services industry had a general concern with regard to security and the potential for malicious conduct, and our willingness to help ICANN understand better and the larger ICANN community understand better what those concerns were. And ICANN certainly recognized financial services as one of the key communities and wanted to understand better what the concerns were. And as we were putting these together, by the way, just as a couple additional notes, in June and July of last year, we participated in the Sydney meeting and in the consultation session in New York, where we sat in on a couple of the panels and started to walk through a little more publicly some of the concerns that we had. Turning to page 8, we submitted our thoughts in August of last year, and if you looked at the detail, the thoughts really track along two lines. Number one was a set of thoughts around changes in the application process that we thought would be appropriate in order to, A, identify new domains that might be oriented strongly toward financial services, and, B, allow for an evaluation of those applications by an appropriate subset of folks who were focused on financial service domains in particular. The second piece, which is probably more germane to the discussions we've been having, was a set of security and stability and resiliency requirements that we thought would be apropos for financial TLDs. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time going through the process requirements, but those are listed really on pages 9 through 11. And certainly I would be happy to answer any questions about them. As I said, if you think about it, it was basically how do we identify applications and segregate them out where the application is for a domain whose primary purpose is offering financial services. How do we validate the legitimacy of the applicants? How do we basically add some controls around limiting the number of top-level domains, and that's where we kind of get into the top-level reserve name list and the string reviews. And then how do we understand the willingness of the applicant to meet the kind of security and control objectives that we have outlined? Probably on page 10, our biggest recommendation was to put together some sort of panel to review these applications in particular, and we envisioned at the time that the panel would probably be made up of some industry participants, perhaps from associations, perhaps from individual institutions. We would probably have some other expertise on the panel, including some public interest representation, perhaps some other community representation as well. The goal there, again, was to review the applications, make sure that the controls were going to be proper, that the applicants were proper, et cetera, et cetera. I think it's safe to say that for the moment at least, In terms of process changes, we've kind of put that piece aside. We recognize that it's probably not likely that we will get process changes of that nature, but we still wanted to go on the record because at the time, at least, we thought it would be a way to enhance the control set around financial GTLDs. On page 12 is where we start actually the security recommendations, and we really broke the security recommendations down into three constituencies. The registry operators themselves, who by far, if you've looked at the list, have the largest number of suggested controls. The registrars, who kind of sit in the middle a bit. And then finally, the registrants themselves, who we still had some controls around, but on a much more limited basis. On page 13, and I think this is probably important in terms of some of the email traffic that's been transpiring between the group. You know, I think it's important to recognize that the control set that we had was focused across a number of not only controls very specific to controlling a domain, but also controls in the broader sense of good IT control environments. So we're talking about things like authentication. We're talking about things like configuration and maintenance standards, business continuity, ongoing monitoring, incident response, change management. You know, I guess one thing I would pause and say here as well is if you did read the detailed document, one of the agreements that we came to rather early in the development of this process was around how deep we would go with these recommendations. So we probably could have written a fairly significant tome around the recommendations, but the agreement that we had with ICANN was to try and keep this pretty high level. To the extent that there were specific existing standards that we wanted to refer to, we were invited to do that, but in some cases we really opted not to, to leave it a little more open and give some flexibility to ICANN in how the program would be developed going forward. So, you know, with 20 minutes, I certainly don't plan to walk through all of the detailed requirements. If you look to the second document, the actual letter and the requirements, you will see all of them listed out. What I've put in the PowerPoint is just kind of the high-level areas in which we have control suggestions. One thing that I think is important to point out is the last bullet on page 13, in that we were not only suggesting controls that the registry operators would need to apply to themselves, but we also laid out a set of requirements around how they vet and set up requirements for the registrars in the domain that they're managing. That same kind of theme actually moves on if we go to page 14, where the registrar and registrant controls are in place. We also had, in the case of the registrars, a number of controls that we thought were important as they accepted registrants that, again, were largely around how they vetted the registrants during the initial registration and the renewal period. Again, though, there we had some issues as well around authentication, around monitoring, and around, you know, how we validate that the registrars are complying with the requirements. And then finally, in the registrant area, as I said, much more limited. If you look at the detailed document, we've got about four pages for the registry operators, probably about a page or so for the registrars, or two pages, and then about a page for the registrants in terms of detail. So we recognize that the registrants themselves, while important, probably play a less important role in this space than the registrars and the registry operators, but nonetheless still needed a set of defined controls. Let me just pause there and explicitly ask if there are any questions up to this point.
This is Evan.
Yeah, Evan.
Hi there. My questions regarding are basically about the recommended process changes. So, like, basically, I guess pages 8 to 11. When I first, forgive me, I missed the last meeting, so I hope this isn't something ignorant of that. But when I recall this was first set up, the idea I had thought was that this was going to be a certification process that was going to be over and above and quite separate from the actual GTLD application process. What I see in pages 8 to 11 is the intention to sort of break off and do a parallel, maybe more stringent, but still a parallel kind of high security category of TLD. And, I mean, I remember as at-large was going over the whole idea about categorizing TLD applications, whether they be community-based or commercial-based or high security-based, there was a lot of pushback to even the concept of categorizing GTLDs when they came in. Would it not be a lot easier in the process to simply say, we're not going to touch the DAG, but we're going to create a certification process that goes over and above that? That way, it's not getting in the way of the actual GTLD application process, which itself has, as we know, got kind of bogged down and needs to be able to go as quickly as it can. Would it not be more worthwhile to treat this whole process as a certification process, as a certification that can work actually quite independently of the actual GTLD application itself?
Yeah, Evan, what those pages convey are the thoughts we had back in August, and all I was trying to do was to cover kind of for all of you in terms of background what we had submitted at the time. I think events that have occurred subsequent to August over the last few months certainly suggest to us that while I won't say that we wouldn't like the ability to have some better control through the application process of financial services TLDs, I think we know the reality is that those changes that we recommended at that time are not really the case. Now what I guess I would suggest is that we put those aside. We're not really trying to push on that issue at all at this point in time. We do recognize that the best approach at this point in terms of satisfying all the communities that are involved in this process is to go with the voluntary, high security TLD program that we're here to talk about. If there was a takeaway for today based on what we did in August, I guess the takeaway would be that not to concentrate on the process changes, but to look at the set of requirements we had laid out. I certainly think that we believe that for financial services domains, these would make sense, and we would certainly be encouraging any applicant for such a domain to enroll in the optional program. And, I think I would certainly suggest that we would like to see, well, let me put it another way. I would offer requirements that we laid out in August as a possible base or starting point that could be added to or deleted from to define what we mean by the control set that defines what a high security TLD looks like.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm no disagreement there. The only other takeaway I would suggest from here is I really would beg this group not to be scared to use the word certification. It has a kind of meaning, especially when you're trying to build public confidence. And there's just too many things about this that sort of smack as a certification program, and I really would suggest that it'll help make it clear to a lot of people if it's actually called that.
Who's the target audience for that? Sorry, this is Andy from Stein Global. That when you say that, I see that Paul, you grouped this into several different areas of concern here. What's interesting is almost all of these things are of interest to a huge number of registrants, regardless of the TLD they're in. And so, whereas we can propose making these mandatory or something like that for other TLDs, it'd be interesting to compare this against the major financials aren't going to be moving off of their existing domain names and stopping doing business there anytime soon. So to that point, how many of these controls should be broadly applicable and not just in some new TLD? And do you think they're already covered in some places? So they're not covered other places. And where do we just for new TLDs, or is this something we'd really like to see as a baseline standard for people to be able to certify across the board to some level?
Well, if I could respond, I guess I would self-describe myself as being pragmatic. I think, the pragmatic part of me suggests that if we could get a good set of requirements around what it means to be a high security TLD, we will have accomplished something good. There is, however, a strong part of me that certainly agrees with you and says, if this is good enough for new, why isn't it good enough for old as well when it comes to domains? And B, are there some things in here that just generally with an overall goal of reducing malicious conduct on the internet that we just, high security or not, if you're a GTLD, you've got to play by, some subset of these rules.
What about the idea of, and this may be going beyond the initial interest, but, what's wrong with having a program for having high security second-level domains that even though you're within a CCTLD or a GTLD that itself doesn't have these stringent requirements, that the second-level domain holds itself to a higher level of security and trust that's verifiable from outside? I'm just saying that's a possibility. And just going back to the original question of who's the target audience, I say that here is probably the only person from at-large on the call. And when I remember reading the original call proposal behind the idea of the HSTLD, actually it was High Security Zone back then, the interest was building public confidence that this was going to be something that financial and other institutions would engage in. But one of the primary intended benefits of this was instilling better public confidence in the quality of the procedures that could be trusted to have been done by members of a certain TLD. So as far as I'm concerned, one of the significant stakeholders in this whole process has to be the public. If all this is done but it does not seem to be a major step in the right direction, it may not succeed in all its goals.
And I don't want to waste time taking up extra the discussion time here, given we have an agenda, but I think we have to have extensive discussion about that. I think that's a pipe dream, but I won't waste the rest of Paul's time on that.
Well, and I guess to that point, that's where I come back to the pragmatic side of me. Would it be fantastic if we could do something that made everything across the board stronger and more secure? Absolutely. We had that one email thread going around about, mom's website. And, there is some reality to suggest that, we could create a website, be it for financial services, be it for healthcare, be it for other critical infrastructure, that in and of itself is extremely secure, but somebody visits mom's website, downloads a piece of malware, and that highly secure financial services domain they're about to go to, that malware just stole their credentials to it. So even though the domain is really great, you know, have we really prevented fraud from occurring? No. But, again, you know, the pragmatic side of me comes to, you know, hey, if we can make this, you know, this is a long race. So if we can get partway through the race and make things better and then, you know, leverage that to incrementally make things better again, you know, I'm all for let's start somewhere and get accomplished what we can.
Excuse me, sir, I'm breaking Frank. Yeah, I think there's several notions which are getting mixed up. We shouldn't intend to try to fix the malware and all of this problem, but I think we should try to fix DNS and the Wii system. And when we talk about high security, and that's what Evan is talking about, is that if I get a domain, who do I complain to as a general public? Or do I trust that this domain is properly registered, has got real people behind it? Yes, of course, my mother could have a domain that is being compromised on its own site and everything, but the problem at the moment is that there's very little action that you can do by looking at this domain on the rules and calling it through. So that's, I think, where is the HSLTLD vision, is to have a system where you can and you can make sure that there's three people behind every domain. The other thing that I see in all this process, Evan was talking about certification, what I see is that it's a process to create a new type of TLD, which is HSTLD, but I don't see a process for moving current TLD to an HSTLD. And I think we need to be mindful to have a progress path that allows you to move from a current running TLD to an HSTLD. That's all I have to say.
Well, this is Paul again. I think I'm done, barring other discussions. So, if yeah, I'm happy to answer any additional questions or whatever. But as far as what I wanted to discuss today, and I think what I was asked to discuss today, hopefully I've covered it, and I think we can move on the agenda. Otherwise,
fantastic. Paul, thanks very much. So to add a little bit of context and to sort of close off on that thought, as Paul mentioned, I think that his material goes back obviously to August, and sort of since then, that it sparked a lot of what we're working on now. So the thought of, you know, his view on the financial TLDs did indeed sort of spark the broader question of what about other TLDs, and that sort of in turn sparked the what about some kind of voluntary program, and that's sort of what got us all here today. So I think providing that context and that background gives the group sort of an idea of the flow of the way that the thoughts went to get us here. And that's sort of, it's good that we had the style and get that all out. So Mike, did you want to talk a little bit more about the subject, or do we want to move on to the next items?
What I'd like to do is, Paul, I thought you were having a good dialogue there with Evan and with Andy, as well as Frank. I just wanted to make sure that everyone got a chance. Is there anyone else, before we move on, that did not get a chance to ask Paul any questions? Okay, good. Then everybody was able to get those questions on the record. Paul, I had a couple of questions, but in light of the shortness of time and wanting to get back to the goal statement, I'll probably just follow up on the list via email so that perhaps the entire group can see those exchanges. So, again, Andy, getting back to the agenda, I think we need to go back to the goal statement, I believe, is
Yeah, let's close off on the goal statement, and we can probably push the rest of the agenda to next week, which is really going over to-dos. I think this week's was more about background and information and getting us all ready for the goal statement. Now that we've got the wiki created, what we'll do is we'll start putting some draft goal material up on the wiki for people to start to help us to build and to write comments on. In addition, we'll put the current draft goal statement. So we've got the goal and the purpose statement that are going up, both going up there. I know, Mike, you and I both have a little bit of draft material, and generally it's focused around sort of the purpose is focused around sort of two areas, the security sort of component of the purpose and the what I'll call the market component of the purpose. And it's interesting, I heard both perspectives in the Paul dialogue. So what I mean by security is it's all about sort of what type of trust and what type of security are we looking at. And we'll have a little bit of clarification around that. And when I talk about market, that's an interesting one because that talks about sort of the registry, registrar, registrant layer, but also sort of does try to get a little bit of detail around the end user. And I may be using that terminology incorrectly, but at some point I think it does add a market value. And I'd be very interested in the group's perspective around this, particularly as we write the statement. But I think it does add a certain amount of value to try to say that the community or the end user could identify that a TLD that they're going to has this level of certification, right? So whether that's through an application interface like a browser or some other mechanism, I do think that's probably something we want to have as a purpose when we move forward. Mike, I know you've got some thoughts as well. Did you want to add some at this point?
No, I think what I'll do is one of the things that I was working on today and that I had shared with Chris was getting back to the problem statement. It's good to have a goal, but again, trying to identify the problem statement of what we're addressing here. And I do have a draft. I'll probably be sending that out probably later this evening. But it does go back to one of the things that I think Paul talked about, which was protecting the customers of financial services.
Right.
And I think that is one of the questions that I think goes back to the statement of Evan that he had raised is, you know, I look at this as how is this going to benefit my mom, you know, 60-year-old mom who's using the internet, you know, what are the benefits there? Because, and I'm trying to figure that out within the context of your original straw man proposal that talked about sort of a site seal. And I
right.
guess, Paul,
right.
one of the things that I perhaps you could elaborate on, not maybe now, but perhaps on the list, is with the financial institutions that you deal with, have they found site seals to be a suitable, if you will, confidence or trust builder for the end consumers, or are they something that are easily duped and modified and if you will, copied and really don't serve the purpose? Because if that's the case, perhaps, you know, again, you know, certification can mean other things other than a site, sort of a seal that's embedded on one site. So these are some of the kind of high-level questions that I still think we need to wrap our arms around in identifying what the problem statement as well as the goals are. I think there's sort of a synergy between those two aspects. Again, that was kind of one of the questions I just wanted to ask Paul earlier before we moved on. But so there we go.
Mike, that's interesting. It's Andy, and we actually kicked around that very thought. So, you know, how is the seal something that's going to be, you know, misused, stolen, copied, pasted, all that kind of stuff? And the thought that we came to was one way to get around that would be to have ICANN sort of or some organization. I think in the concept paper I mentioned it as ICANN, but obviously that's, you know, it's a concept. It could be different. The thought that there'd be a sort of a system of record that could be referenced to look up to see that, yes, indeed, the seal was valid. That kind of gives a couple of things as possibilities if you go that route. The first is, you know, obviously people could mechanically go look up the seal, which they probably won't. People I'm guessing people are probably not going to take the extra step to do that. But tools like web browsers and so forth could also mechanically reference the list as well. And if you set it up that way, you know, perhaps there could be some kind of, you know, like a SSL sort of little key or a flag that indicates that, yes, indeed, this is a certified TLD. So there are some things there that could be explored. I think that's sort of further along down the development path. But certainly from a purpose perspective, I think that it supports that maybe we look at that end user level, because I do think it's important.
Yeah, and this is Paul. I will certainly comment in the thread, because my comments would probably be fairly lengthy at this point. But in the thread, I would expect that I'm likely to speak to two points. One is the issue around kind of what was suggested, which is how, for lack of a better term, portable does that seal become? So could somebody just kind of take the seal and slap it on a website that isn't really in the program? But, you know, in a broader sense, I will probably make some comments around, and this, I guess, gets to the question of how do we certify. I'm sure there will be some concern and thought around, even if the seal is legitimately there, what does it really mean, and how did we certify that the site, in fact, deserved the seal? And all I could probably say three initials that have caused some broad press and concern, particularly around financial fraud. Those three initials, the first one is a P, the second one is a C, and the third one is an I, where there are a set of standards that exist today that ostensibly people have been certified against and yet have been the subject of large data thefts. So, you know, if we looked at that model, we might say that may not be the model that we want to use for how we certify these sites. But again, I will certainly put my thoughts together and throw them onto the and share them with everybody.
So
as we're building material and putting it up onto the wiki, to the extent that it's new, you know, sort of new material and fresh to look at, I'll try to let the mailing list know too, so people can sort of focus on it.
Somebody wanted to get in the queue, I heard.
Yeah, this is Andy again from PayPal, and you know, we've got a huge amount of experience dealing with end-user security indicators and battling the phishing problem and so on. And so, I really want to the extent possible, to separate this into sort of three pieces. And one is, what are the security requirements? The second is, what kind of reasonable assurance / certification regime do we think is required to demonstrate compliance? Right, and then the third one is end-user security indicators. I mean, clearly, we're all, you know, the reason to do a lot of this is to protect the companies and their consumers and their users, right, from security issues. But going so far as to turn this into an end-user security indicator is a massive, massive step forward, you know, over some line, I think. There's been a huge amount of research done over the last couple of years on end-user security indicators, how consumers consume them, how software consumes them, what do they mean, et cetera. And trying to tackle that as part of this effort, I think, is crazy, right? Take a look at all the work that's gone into, for example, EV certificates or something, and there's still lots of discussion in the literature about how valuable they are, whether they actually have a security impact, what do they mean, and so on. And for us to presume that we're somehow going to come up with some recommendation or a scheme for that here that actually meaningfully does anything, I think is a bit of a stretch, right? And the number of people who backed that, and it's still not always clear in a lot of people's minds how effective it is. We think it's effective. We've got some data that says it's effective, but other people disagree. So, you know, to go so far as to turn this into some end user, yes, it's an end-user security feature insofar as the site that they're talking to is not very likely to have had their DNS compromised or their registry records compromised that points you at malicious DNS or something. Great. That helps end-user security.
to turn it into an end-user security indicator, though, that users are directly watching out for and making decisions on and so on, I think is a bit of a stretch.
Thank you, Andy, for and I appreciate that articulation, and particularly with your company's experience in this area. I think that's an important point that should be well grounded in our discussion. And I think this perhaps goes to some of the stuff that I think Chris has talked about as far as risk benefit analysis and stuff like that. Again, what is the problem and what is our goal? And I think we need to be very modest in what we're trying to achieve and not overreach, because if we do overreach, I think we'll probably fall short and we'll not be successful. So those three points, I was just trying, was requirements, assurance, and end user. If you could just perhaps highlight those three points and send them out to the list to perhaps, expand upon it and perhaps maybe even put this on the wiki, because clearly, eBay and PayPal's experience in these areas, I think are PayPal's is particularly important and insightful.
I can do that, no problem.
I think that'll help us sharpen the scope.
Can I bring you?
On it.
Hey, guys, this is Paul. I just have to step away for a minute, so if you call on me, I'm not being rude.
Thank you, Paul. And we're pretty much almost at the end. We have about 5 minutes left.
Right.
Again, I want to make sure,
right.
Is there anyone that, yes, who wants to speak?
Yes, just to supplement what I was saying from Yahoo, I don't think any certification of Web Seal or anything will be a lot of use to the end user, but I think the end user will rely on third-party system to decide or not if he should or not view the website or receive the emails via tool like Spam Assassin or what Google is using or what Firefox is using inside the system via Google to see if the domain is valuable, and other tools like McAfee, which given a rating of a website. So I think the whole process is to make it available so that third parties can build tools that will filter the content for the end user.
All right, excellent. And is there anyone else that wants to speak? We're pretty much at the end here, but I want to make sure everyone's had the opportunity.
Hey, Michael, this is Craig Schwartz. Just FYI, there's this Zone File Access Advisory Group that was formed at the same time as the HSTLD, and we have calls on Thursdays. We pretty much have decided that we're going to extend our meeting calls from 60 to 90 minutes because we're finding it difficult to get a lot of work done in 60 minutes. So I tossed that out maybe for discussion on the list within this group as something to consider.
Craig, I think that's potentially that's a good point. Before we go to 90 minutes, my individual comment would be, let's see if we could perhaps take some of this work offline using the wiki, be a little more asynchronous, and then use the 60 minutes each week to perhaps resolve points of contention as opposed to reaching contention. If we can reach consensus and move forward off list, that's great. Let's use the 60 minutes for resolution. If that doesn't work and if we're not moving forward, then yes, I think expanding to 90 minutes is something that I would put forward to the group. And as I said, if the team members thought that they had that extra, they can make that 90-minute commitment each week, we would definitely go that way. So I guess that's my own individual personal statement. Perhaps just a real quick straw poll. I mean, how do other people feel? Would they rather just go to 90 minutes, or would they try to work asynchronously online through the email list and wiki?
Oh, this is Mikey. I like 90 better just because keeping track of all mail threads is pretty rugged.
Okay. Andy, Evan?
I prefer email myself because there's a decent chance at any given time that my meeting slot is going to get gobbled up. And so, I mean, I'm not opposed to moving it. I still think I want to make sure that we try to do as much of this in an hour thoughtful fashion online, where people can actually go think about things rather than just having to have the in-person discussion.
Sure. Evan?
I'm fine with 90, but I think there might also be some measures that allow the time spent in the meeting to go better. I've had extreme success within both GNSO and at large working with Adobe Connect. I really would recommend that you give it a try, even if not everybody likes it. There's some people that could probably make some really good use of it.
Excellent. Steve Holston, I know you were on the call. Steve, what are your comments?
I'd rather go with the email in 60 minutes.
Okay. Is there any, I don't have the role of who's on. So, Craig, can you perhaps just, you have it, if you could shout out some names there real quick and just get a sense.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I have not been paying attention to.
Okay.
I'll throw in my two cents. I'm fine with 90. The only caveat I have is that for these later evening meetings, they're usually occurring on a day I travel, so those days I might not be able to make the full 90.
Okay.
Michael, John McElwain, I agree with working offline and trying to keep it to 60 if we can do so.
Chris, my fellow co-chair.
I would prefer email because of my spoken English, for sure.
Okay. And again, the benefit of the if we do email and on the wiki, there is the benefit to allow those people that may want to look at our activities to follow it. So I guess what happens is let's see where we go in the next week or two and make that decision of whether we go to 90 perhaps in, 2 weeks. Let's see if we can make some progress with the 60-minute offline call, with the 60-minute calls and the offline use of email and the wiki. So, and if we're not meeting, if we're not where we need to be, then we will consider going to 90. So, I think we are at the end of the call today. I'd like to again thank everybody for taking their time out. Over the next week, let's try to use the wiki in advance some of the aspects with regard to the problem statement as well as with our goal statement. Okay. And thanks again, Paul, for your presentation. It was very helpful, and I would encourage everyone to read some of the more detailed documentation that you provided that does a much more deeper dive on the slides that you gave today.
And I would offer as well, if questions come up as you're going through the materials or thinking about it again, please feel free to throw it out there, and I'll get back to you.
Excellent. All right, so I think the meeting is at a close. Andy, do you have any final things, or can we wrap up?
No, I think the big to-do is we're going to get some purpose material up on the wiki and let everyone know. And for those that are having trouble or haven't received the email, we'll get that resolved by Friday for you.
Excellent. All right, thanks again, everybody, and look forward to speaking next week at our earlier time.
Great.
Okay. Bye.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye now.
Bye.